Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Rev Rebellion, Rev Warriors Series, Book Number 9, by T.R. Harris, narrated by Keith Sellen Wright. We are all blind until we see that in the human plan nothing is worth the making if it does not make the man. Why build these cities glorious if man unbuilded goes? In vain we build the work, unless the builder also grows. Man-making, Edwin Markham. Prologue. 2127, 1 year ago. The team of AC-3 and Alpha Revs moved up to the tree line and surveyed the factory complex located in the shallow valley below. The 17 members of the strike force had traveled for 8 miles through the thick growth of the southern Panamanian trade zone to reach this point. It was 2 in the morning, and still sweltering hot, which was typical for the zone. Located below the southern border of Mexico and north of Colombia, the PTZ played host to hundreds of factories producing everything from bicycles to pharmaceuticals. It was the pharmaceuticals that had brought the Revs here this hot and muggy night. The targeted facility was part of the super-conglomerate Summerlin Industries and was the primary manufacturing site for the Rev drug AC-3. With the demand for the illicit drug, the raid this evening would be a windfall for a dozen cartels and other interested groups who sponsored the operation, making it an oddity within the criminal world. Usually, outlaws didn't pool their resources. But in this case, they did. Aaron Lake was sweating profusely within the XN3 Rev battlesuit, straining to move the 500 pounds of composite steel and armament as he trudged through the jungle. The suit was designed in the days of the NT4 Revs, who were much stronger and hardier than the AC3 Revs of today. At that time, weight wasn't a factor. Today, it was. Aaron was a senior Alpha, having transitioned 2 years before. That gave him priority, making him the only one of the strike force with a battle suit. The others came shrouded in standard flak jackets and automatic rifles. They weren't going up against other Revs, so they would be fine. Aaron was along for the shock value, since the Vs hadn't seen a Rev during a run in over 20 years. The video from tonight would send chills through the already frightened masses. The running Rev was back. So beware. The strategy sounded good on paper, but reality was a whole other matter. Although he'd trained a little in the operation of the suit, he even fired a burst of rounds from the cannon bolted to his right arm, Aaron hadn't actually operated the suit on a mission before. And although he was a Rev like the others, he was holding them up in their progress through the dense overgrowth, placing them 30 minutes behind schedule when they reached their destination and took a break to prepare for the assault.
"Are you okay in there?"
Jenny Stacks asked through his helmet comm. She was off to his right, peering at the black hunk of metal barely visible in the dark of the moonless night.
"Yeah, fine,"
Aaron replied angrily. He wasn't mad at her for asking, but at himself for her having to do so.
"Just taking some getting used to. Give me 5 minutes to replenish my reserves. We're already behind schedule. Listen up. We go in 5. Take your positions."
Through his visor, Aaron saw the other members of the team move into positions. It wasn't much, just spreading out in a line before they would make the Rev dash for the security fence. He concentrated, trying to muster up any extra activation he could. He didn't know if that were possible. He'd never been in combat before. Sure, he'd activated hundreds of times, but that was mainly for fun and to show off at parties. But this time, it was for real. This is what Revs were made for. At least, real Revs. It was at that moment that Aaron realized he didn't consider himself a real Rev. Instead, he was homegrown, a human of Earth who surreptitiously began taking illicit AC3 and then eventually transitioned to an Alpha, a Rev who naturally produced the drug on his own. People like Aaron arrogantly called themselves T-Revs, standing for Terrestrial Revs. Even so, he'd never been trained in combat or military maneuvers. None of them had. Instead, they were relying on the element of surprise and their natural Rev abilities. After all, in the old days, the Revs weren't trained either. They were simply mindless killing machines pointed in a direction and let go. And they did it in the XN3 battlesuits, like the ancient one Aaron was wearing. Hell, if a mindless beast could operate the suit, then he certainly could. However, it was damn heavy, and he would be glad to get rid of the thing at the end of the mission. Jenny Stack gave the order to attack, sending the line of Revs racing for the security fence on the other side of a 30-yard band of cleared jungle. The other 16 team members simply used their Rev muscles to jump over the 12-foot-high fence. Aaron tried the same, but came up short, crashing into the wire barrier about 3 feet short of the top. He recoiled and fell back on the ground with a heavy thud. He scrambled to his feet before stepping back and racing toward the fence again. He lowered his shoulder and ripped through the fence with ease, not even breaking stride.
So this is what it's like to be on a run?
The factory was huge, covering about 200,000 square feet under roof and on 3 levels. The team was heading for the multiple sets of roll-up doors at the rear, where a dozen heavy cargo trucks were either parked ass-end to the loading dock or waiting for their turn. The factory ran 24/7, although at this hour only about half the regular staff was on site. Workers were scrambling to get out of the way of the attacking force, being unarmed and unprepared for the assault. It was the security team's responsibility to protect the site, not theirs. And the sentries were there, and they were good. Several had already opened fire on the Revs, striking several as they ran with Rev speed toward the building. None of the Revs went down. It would take a lot of hits to take one out, and by then the Revs were returning fire and at a rate and accuracy far superior to the trained troops facing them. Aaron was bringing up the rear, thudding along with long strides in his heavy armored suit. He stretched out his right arm, aiming the cannon at the rear of the building where most of the opposing gunfire was coming from. He triggered the weapon while in full stride, something he'd never done before. The weapon's recoil was expected, but not while he was in mid-stride and off balance. He spun around and fell, all the while spraying heavy-caliber rounds in a semicircle around him. In an instant he saw Ryan Meeks ripped in half, a victim of friendly fire. His fire. The shells from the cannon were an equivalent of 50-caliber rounds, making even a Rev an easy target when raked with a dozen of them. Aaron shuddered at what he had just done. His first kill as a Rev was of another Rev, and a friend of his. The emotional stress of the moment moved his Rev level into high gear, finding that extra surge he'd been looking for earlier. He climbed to his feet and resumed his run, doing his best to push the image of Ryan's death from his mind. He had a mission to do, and now he was more determined than ever to complete it successfully. Aaron bounded onto the loading dock and entered the main structure. Bullet rounds were pinging off his suit with regularity, but he hardly noticed them. Instead, he followed the heads-up display on his visor as it identified active targets. Bracing himself more against the recoil, Aaron began returning fire, becoming a vital part of the assault at that point. The other Revs were deep in the building, killing anything that moved. They knew where they were going, and soon they entered the massive storeroom where the AC-3 was stored, preparing for shipment off the planet to eventually reach Krios, the adopted home of the Rev Corps. By then, nearly all the resistance was gone, with most of the security team having realized they were overmatched by the attacking Revs. The ones who continued with the defense of the facility now lay dead on the concrete floor, along with a dozen of the unfortunate factory workers. But now Aaron stopped, stunned and staring at the towering stack of brown-sided barrels reaching to the high ceiling. Most of the other revs were doing the same.
"Is this all AC-3?" someone asked on the comm.
A rev moved forward and began checking the labels.
"These are,"
and he looked up.
"All of them are."
Aaron did a quick count. There had to be 300 or more barrels, each resembling 55-gallon containers.
"Jesus," Jenny gasped. "This is enough to make a million revs."
Aaron knew she was off on her math, since every successful transition took multiple infusions. But he got the idea. They all did. This was the mother lode, the holy grail of AC-3 supply. The only problem? They weren't prepared to take it all.
"Jake, Ben, get a forklift," Jenny ordered. "The hovercraft can only take 9 barrels and it will be landing at any time."
"Are we just going to leave the rest of it?" Jim Nolan asked.
"No, we're not," Jenny answered. "The rest of you get some of those trucks outside. Each of them can probably carry 30 or more barrels. We'll get as much as we can and then spread out across the zone. Our sponsors are strong in this area. We'll turn them over to them
and reap the reward," someone said with a chuckle. Aaron was smiling from ear to ear. Originally, they were after a stock of 9 barrels, all the hovercraft could carry away from the scene. This was to be divided among the 4 sponsors of the heist, with the bulk of the take delivered to Nevada. But there was no need to let so much inventory go to waste.
"I'll stand cover," Aaron announced through the comm. "The rest of you, get to work. Nothing is going to stop you from loading, not if I have anything to say about it."
The loading went off without a hitch, and after the hovercraft came and went, the revs led a small caravan of trucks out through the loading entrance. They had to fight more security troops, but that didn't take long or too much effort. The security force at the factory was caught flat-footed, never imagining that a force of revs would attack the facility. After all, they were on Earth, and all the T-revs they knew of were primarily individual addicts in some stage of transitioning or dying. They never imagined an organized assault of 17 armed revs. So, despite the amateurish execution of the operation, the raid turned out to be light years more successful than originally planned. And because of that, everything changed. Less than 15 hours later, a visibly upset Howard Summerlin, Jr. was in the trade zone, surveying the damage to his facility and assessing the impact of the theft.
"They got away with 93 barrels, said the factory manager, a dark-skinned Panamanian named Francisco Vega. He wore an informal open-collar shirt and was sweating, as everyone did in the zone. Everyone except Howard Summerlin. The tall, majestic young man with slicked-back black hair and eyes like the 8-ball was dressed in an expensive silk suit and tie, even at 3 in the afternoon in the middle of the sweltering Panamanian jungle. He showed no sign of discomfort from the heat. Instead, his discomfort came from the fact that someone had violated his territory, his property. This was more than a theft. It was an affront to the man, the legend that was Howard Summerlin. Yes, the act upset him, but even so he didn't seem overly distressed with the actual loss of inventory.
"What batch did they take?"
Francisco grinned, knowing where this was going.
419.
"Nothing else?"
"No, sir. The 60 class is still secure."
"Make sure it stays that way.
Now that people know we're vulnerable, others may try it."
"Other revs?" Francisco asked.
"Exactly, so prepare for that. They're getting more aggressive."
"And the inventory?"
Summerlin thought for a moment before shrugging.
Make an effort to find it, but then let it drop. In the long run, this may work to our benefit. And if I'm asked why we're not looking that hard, I'll say we don't want to give the theft any more publicity than it's already gotten. That should appease the people in Congress.
Sounds like a plan, sir. I'll get right on it.
Howard Summerlin looked up at the still impressive stacks of brown barrels containing the miracle drug AC-3. He would move most of it off-planet, get it to Crius where it could be better protected. Besides, the quicker this run of AC-3 gets dispensed, the better. It would make a hell of a lot of alphas. Chapter 1 2128, Present Day. The young Zeta Rev stumbled down the passageway, his clammy flesh squeaking against the smooth metal walls, sounding like cries from a wounded animal. To Sergeant David Powell, the sound was appropriate. The Rev was sick, and for the first time in his life. Revs didn't get sick, ever, and especially not a Zeta Rev. David was the product of the mating between two Alpha Revs, the class of enhanced warrior that had to go through two transitions, from normal to human, to AC-3 Rev, and then to Alpha, before their bodies began producing the Rev drug on their own. At that stage, the Alpha was self-sufficient and no longer in need of boosters of the performance-enhancing drug AC-3. But the true significance of this transition was that now male and female alphas could mate and produce offspring, the breed of Rev known as Zetas. A Zeta was born a Rev, not needing any outside help to achieve that status. Granted, the final transition didn't happen until puberty, but for a Zeta, that was around 8 years old. Zetas aged and matured quicker, reaching full adulthood at what would be around 14 for a normal human. In all respects, Zeta Revs were a superior form of human and one normally immune from illness. They could be killed in battle or by accident, but not even cancer affected the Zetas. And that was why David Powell was so confused. He'd never been sick before. He'd been injured during training exercises. But this was different. The sick bay was a short distance ahead. David had been there only once before, for a stress rupture of a blood vessel after a particularly intense training op. That was what the corpsmen were trained to do, treat injuries and battle wounds, not illnesses. He'd never known a Rev to be sick, so he doubted if the medical staff would have the first clue what was wrong with him. Still, he was desperate, and if there was one thing the Zeta Rev could sense with certainty, if he didn't get help soon, he would die. The Rev fell through the double-swinging doors of the sick bay, gasping once before falling to the deck, startling ScanTech Bud Lipton.
"Carly, stat!"
he yelled as he ran to the moaning Marine. HM1 Carly Sims rushed into the room and knelt at the patient.
"Is this another one?"
she asked, even as Lipton had no idea what she was talking about. He was one of the staff who ran the CAT and X-ray machines and never treated patients. He'd only been on the Valhalla for 4 months and hadn't been aboard during any of the Rev ops in the Outer Reaches. He wouldn't have known about the others.
"Is he injured?" Lipton asked.
That's a good question, Carly thought. God, I hope so. The alternative would be even more tragic. The senior hospital corpsman ran her hands along the body of the semi-conscious Rev, looking for injuries. There was nothing out of the ordinary. No blood, no swollen joints, nothing she could detect.
"He's burning up with fever,"
Lipton reported as he pressed the back of his palm against the Rev's forehead.
"And his pulse is going crazy."
"That's normal for a Rev," Carly assured the technician. "Help me get him on the table." The handsome young Rev, looking to be not more than 20, was heavier than he should have been. Carly knew this was from the added muscle density, making a Zeta Rev about 10% heavier than a normal human of the same size and build. Together, Carly and Lipton removed the patient's shirt before she placed a stethoscope to his chiseled chest as Lipton activated the bed sensors. The monitors sprung to life. Lipton whistled.
You say this is normal? Temperature 108, blood pressure 223 over 120, and pulse 149? And he's unconscious?
Carly didn't have time to fill the rookie in on the physiology of a Rev.
Go find Dr. Reynolds, stat, and get a nurse in here.
Lipton sprinted away. Carly pulled back the eyelids and found the sclera was red from thousands of tiny broken blood vessels. This was the sign of Rev activation, but not in a Zeta. She gently slapped the side of the Rev's face, checking for a response. His eyes fluttered.
Wake up, Marine, she said forcefully. I need to know what happened to you.
His eyes opened barely.
I'm sick.
I can see that. Where does it hurt?
Everywhere. My joints, my head, my skin, it's on fire.
Carly could tell the young man was using the last of his reserve energy to make his report.
Okay, relax. But one thing, did you eat anything recently that could have made you sick?
Nothing since 0600. Same as everyone in the mess hall.
No one else had come to sick bay complaining of food poisoning. Carly was at a loss, just as before. If this were a normal patient, she would be able to identify any number of bacterial, viral, or fungal maladies that could be affecting her patient.
But this was a damn Rev.
Nothing affected them short of a 50-caliber round through the chest, and certainly not something biological. She looked up from the Rev.
Where the hell is Dr. Reynolds?
The Navy commander rushed into the room, accompanied by Lipton and HM3 Cindy Scott.
Lipton says he's a Rev, Reynolds said to Carly.
The same as before?
It appears so, sir. He's experiencing pain throughout his body, and his skin is burning, sensitive to the touch. Last meal was 0600 in the mess hall. That was 9 hours ago. No reports of contamination in that time.
Very well. Scott, let's start a full-spectrum workup. Blood, bone marrow, fluid, everything.
The doctor examined the patient, who had now fallen unconscious again.
And get a crash cart in here and a respirator.
The doctor placed an O2 mask over the Rev's nose and mouth after completing his examination. He listened to his heart and lungs and studied the monitors.
Any change since he arrived? He asked Carly. She'd been watching the screens.
No, sir. He appears to be stable, although now he's sweating. Just like the others.
The commander's eyes met Carly's, conveying a look of hopelessness. But still, there was a chance this one would be different.
Lipton, check his clothing, the doctor ordered. Find out who he is and then get his squad leader down here. I need to know where he's been recently, what missions he's been on.
Sir, we haven't been near any planets in 39 days, Lipton reported. No one's been on or off the ship in that time.
As far as you know. Find out anyway.
Revs don't get sick without a reason. This could be some sort of Seekan biological weapon targeting the Revs, something slow-acting. Carly saw Lipton's eyes grow wide. He'd been touching the Rev without gloves, unlike what the doctor and hospital corpsmen were wearing. Carly took him by the arm.
Scrub up first and use the phone. Don't leave the compartment until we have the patient isolated and you've been checked.
The doctor nodded at the HM1.
I hope to God it is a Seekan bioweapon, and one aimed at the Revs. At least then we'd know if the rest of us are safe or not.
Lipton's face turned pale before rushing from the exam room.
That was cruel, sir,
Carly said with a grin. Reynolds snickered.
I suppose so. But until we find out what's wrong with this man, it may also be true.
The medical team never got the chance to find out what had affected Sergeant David Powell. He never regained consciousness and died 71 hours later of causes unknown, just like the others. Chapter 2. Brigadier General Zachariah Murphy pressed the face mask against his nose and mouth as he leaned over to examine the corpse of Sergeant Powell. The young Zeta Rev's body had turned yellow, and his veins showed prominently through the almost translucent skin. His chest had been cut open and then haphazardly sewn back together. "It's some kind of blood disorder," Dr. Reynolds said gravely. "That's all we know. A form of severe anemia." "Could it be from a bioagent?" the general asked. Reynolds shook his head. "I have no idea. None of the others showed any sign of prior infection. No rashes. No abnormal vitals. You know, we checked them all after each surface mission." "The autopsies didn't reveal anything?" "Just that the blood doesn't hold oxygen anymore. There doesn't seem to be a barrier stopping the absorption. This is something deeper. Probably genetic." Zach looked intently at the doctor. "Can you explain that more?" "Not really. If it's genetic, that means it's happening at the level of DNA. I don't have the equipment nor the expertise to do a proper study." He looked back at the body on the table. "But the one thing I do know is that one moment this man was well and perfectly fit, and within 3 days he was dead." Dr. Reynolds didn't need to finish the sentence. Zach knew what he was thinking. "Just like the others." Back in his away cabin, Zach fingered the buttons on the special command panel he had at his desk, and a few moments later the image of Dr. David Cross appeared. "More?" Cross asked before Zach could speak. Zach sensed the doctor hadn't slept since the first report about Powell's death a day before. "Another one today," Zach reported. "That makes 3 aboard the Valhalla, and all Zetas." Cross's face was a study in anguish. "We've also had 4 on Enif, and Diamond just reported the first on Krios."
8, and all Zetas," Zach stammered.
"And since it's happening all over the place, we can rule out any Seekan or Aslorian involvement. None of the Revs on Krios or Enif have had any exposure to the outer reaches during this latest campaign."
"Unless the disease has an incredibly long incubation period," Cross said. The tone of his voice told Zach that he didn't believe what he was saying. Like Zach, he was grasping for straws.
"The doctor aboard the Valhalla thinks it could be genetic. What does that mean?"
"It means he's probably right. This could be something endemic to the Revs."
"And to Zeta Revs exclusively?"
"Which makes it even worse."
Zach knew what he meant. The statement hung in the air for several seconds before Cross spoke again.
"Tell me about the latest victim."
"He was nothing out of the ordinary, an M308 pilot, and he never went near any of the residual bomb clouds. He came aboard after the attack on Voris and didn't see any action, only training missions during our evacuation from the reaches."
"What the hell is going on, David?
Revs aren't supposed to die this way."
"I understand, Zach," Cross said. "I'm at a loss to explain it, too. If it were affecting the other Revs, I would say it's a problem with the AC3 formula. But these are Zetas. They've never had an infusion of anything. And out of the 9,000 Zetas, there have now been 8 deaths, which statistically is not significant." He held up his hand to stop Zach's protest.
"I know. Not significant, unless we're talking about a Rev population."
"And the fact that all deaths have happened in the past week," Zach pointed out.
"Yeah, that is a problem. And it tells us we should be expecting a lot more. But the one silver lining is this doesn't seem to be passed from Rev to Rev, so it doesn't spread like a virus."
"But your doctor probably hit the nail on the head. If it's genetic, then there may be nothing we can do about it.
We just need to find out who's susceptible and who isn't.
How do we do that?
Sample complete. Ready to continue?